Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your hosts from 970 ESPN and Steelers Nation Radio, David Todd, and from SteelersDepot.com, Dave Bryan. Just a couple of Daves chilling, talking Steelers. Now, here's Dave and Dave.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave, Season 6, Episode 128. I'm Dave Bryan from SteelersDepot.com, and sitting in for my co-host David Todd, as he's been doing all summer long, Alex Kozora. Alex, I would say happy Friday to you, but I'd be lying. How about just Friday?
That sums it up well, Dave. Yeah, this day sucks in a lot of ways.
Especially if you're a Pittsburgh Steelers fan, that's for sure.
Especially if you're in Pittsburgh, too, because it's storming like crazy outside, which is appropriate for the news today.
Well, there you go. Other than it being hot as hell in Las Vegas. Look, Alex, let's get right to it. I mean, we can't say that we don't have a lot to talk about today, that we're going to be scraping the bottom of the barrel as far as discussion topics go. We're going to start off with the news that broke bright and early Friday morning. Dan Graziano from ESPN.com is reporting that Steelers running back Le'Veon Bell is indeed facing a four-game suspension for reportedly missing a drug test. Now, we don't know if this is the same, kind of rumor slash report that we had, several weeks ago, but it almost sounds like it is kind of related to that. The reason probably we haven't heard about it from the league as of yet, according to Graziano, is the fact that Le'Veon Bell apparently is trying to appeal this, and we all know how that's probably going to turn out, if indeed true. But, we have to take this report more serious than we had to take the last one. And then, you go back to that last one on top of it, Le'Veon Bell reportedly denied that as well. So, it really, really sounds like, barring something happening, and look, we need to treat this with caution because of the way the last report turned out. But, one would expect this to become official at some point. And if it does, it looks like the Steelers are going to be without Le'Veon Bell for the first four games of the 2016 season.
Yeah, I mean, I don't mean to get bogged down in the who had it first, because obviously that's the last thing really any Steelers fans care about. But, I mean, I'll give credit where credit is due. Mark Madden had this about a month ago, and he's taken his victory lap on Twitter, as we kind of expected. And, I mean, it sounds like the identical report. It just took a while for it to come out, and although at the time we weren't sure if it was true or not, and Bell was saying no, and there wasn't any confirming reports out there to solidify that rumor, and Madden even said that he wasn't 100% sure in it. It totally sounds like his report now. It's for missed drug tests. It's not for failed drug tests, but the league treats a missed test like a failed test, and rightfully and appropriately so. So, yeah, Friday news dumps is when the league officially kind of comes out with this. Obviously, today's Friday, so we'll see if it comes out today, or if they still got to go through an appeal process or whatever. I'm not entirely sure of all the channels that it goes through, but it would be very shocking to see Bell, for him to not be suspended at all.
I think I said a couple of weeks ago, I'm not so much concerned about Le'Veon Bell moving forward after that first, indiscretion of his that ultimately cost him the first two games of the 2015 season. Boy, shame on me. I kind of look at Bell a little bit differently than I do Martavis Bryant. I was not I wasn't shocked at all, for Bryant going through what he did again. I'm a little bit more shocked at Bell. I just kind of have always viewed Bell as being, a player that, had his head screwed on a little bit tighter, and that maybe he got caught up in kind of that peer pressure, influence of LeGarrette Blount a couple of years ago, you know, young kid in the league and that kind of stuff. But I mean, it's obvious now, and if indeed this report by Graziano winds up being true, and there's no reason to think that it won't be, this is just bad decision making. This decision making on Bell's part could ultimately cost him a lot of money.
It's horrible, Dave. And I don't try to get too emotional or too upset about this stuff, but I'm upset. I mean, right now, and everyone should be as well, and everyone clearly is. I don't get it. How do you justify, potentially losing out on a long-term contract, not being out there for your team, not being out there for yourself? You know, he's really dying to get out there and play football again, or at least that was the thought. He's been working out like crazy. Obviously, he's coming off the injury last year. He wants to be out there and play and show what he can do. And he's throwing it away. I don't get it. I mean, even if you think the pot should be legal and you should be able to smoke it, whatever, that's fine. That's your personal opinion. Go for it. Go crazy. But just don't smoke pot. It's not that hard. You're only in the league for 8 to 10 years. You can do it whatever you want afterwards. I don't care. It's just it's selfish. He repeatedly has put himself above the team, and it's just it's such a juxtaposition when you compare D'Angelo Williams, who's been a team guy through and through this whole time, with Le'Veon Bell. I just can't wrap my head around it.
And when you look at and I don't think this is hyperbole or as hyperbole as I like to call it. You look at two players like Bell and Martavis Bryant. These two guys have the talent that, you know, if they were to play 6, 7, 8 years in a league, we could be talking about them as some of the best to ever play their respective positions, right?
Yeah, I mean, they have all the talent in the world, absolutely. But it's hard to show it when you're on your couch and everyone else is out there playing football.
Yep. The thing is with Bell now, look, I'm not going to sit here and use this whole podcast to take shots at Le'Veon Bell. I obviously thought that he would get past this first suspension. I thought he'd come back from this knee injury. I thought I really liked the prospects of him getting a long-term deal done this offseason. But now, I mean, quite honestly, I mean, is there any, assuming this is true, is there any way the Steelers give him a long-term deal this offseason?
It'd be even more stupid than Bell's own actions to reward him with a long-term deal. It would be just reckless financially, and it would be a slap in the face to the rest of the organization and the players to say, yeah, if you keep smoking pot and you keep being selfish and putting the team ahead of you, you'll still get your long-term deal anyway. I don't even care how the deal's structured. I don't care if it's less money or if it's more team-friendly. No, there's no way that a deal is going to get done. There's no way a player can be rewarded with that. There's no way you can give a guy a long-term deal. And at the media, you know, the press conference, the first question is, you know, why do you keep smoking pot? What led to this? It's just, it would be horrible from every angle. So I'm with you, Dave, that I think, you know, the best case scenario for Bell is that he plays out this year, does well, and gets hit with a franchise tag, where it's kind of a low-risk situation for the Steelers.
Yeah, and I know people are kind of caught up. I wrote about that just before we started this podcast this morning. And you know, it's kind of a Captain Obvious post, but I just wanted to put it out there for people to have. Look, I'm the one who's clueless, right? I had to stick that in there somewhere. But, I mean, look, if you think he's going to get a new money average of $15 million this offseason, yeah, right. If you think he's even going to get a $13 million new money average this offseason, yeah, right. As we just said, the possibilities of a long-term deal now, I mean, unless he just gives the Steelers, a deal they just, they can't refuse, and he would really be stupid, I think, now to do that. I will be now shocked if that happens. I'm jumping on the other side of the fence, the tennis net, because I thought for sure that there was a good chance he was going to get a long-term deal. Boy, where's this audio coming from in my my ear? Okay, I got it straightened out there. But franchise tag looks like the most likely situation now, and this assumes that he serves his 4-game suspension. And is the same Le'Veon Bell he was prior to going down with that knee injury against Cincinnati Bengals last year. And on top of that, look, you can string him along a couple of years if you want to on this franchise tag, and I know it's a large cap hit that comes along with it, but on top of it, the Steelers could still work out a long-term deal after hitting him with a franchise tag. However, comma, as I wrote in this post this morning, you know, they would be stupid to do that without, you know, without the contract being in their favor, guaranteed money-wise. So, I, you know, to think Le'Veon Bell hasn't cost himself a lot of money this offseason is absolutely foolish. And, you know, we talked a lot about, I'll give you a solid run on this in a minute, Alex, is we talked about several times during the last, you know, few weeks podcast-wise how almost certain that Le'Veon Bell is going to start the regular season off on the PUP list. You'd be stupid not to put him on the active PUP list at the start of training camp. Now, why even risk him now at all during training camp in the preseason?
Yeah, I don't know how they're going to handle camp in the preseason, to be honest, Dave. You know, they might just treat it, you know, business as usual because he still is going to need to get some reps. I mean, I know he's going to have to miss the first month, not be around the facility at all, but, you know, you still think he's got to get some reps within the offense just so whenever he does return, you know, it hasn't been over a year, you know, since he's taken reps with this offense, or at least close to a year. You know, here's going back to the contract real quick, Dave. What about, you know, going to next year? You know, the deal's up. He said last year was contract. What about the transition tag instead of the franchise tag? Because I know the downside of the transition tag is that he's kind of more open to being poached by other teams. But is anyone poaching Le'Veon Bell with all this baggage at this point?
Sure, they will.
I don't know.
Sure they will. There's always,
I mean, there's a chance. Yeah, there. But it's a lot less. It's a lot lesser now.
I wouldn't say a lot lesser. No. I mean, I wouldn't say a lot lesser. No.
This is a guy that's another missed test away from a 1-year suspension.
There's still at least one team out there willing to do that.
Right.
I think. And is it worth saving the extra, what, $1.5 million or so?
I mean, yeah, I don't know what the difference would be. We would have to obviously wait to see what the numbers are. It might be more, a little more than $1.5 million, but
I'll have to look this up. What the tag amounts were this year, but I mean, you get the compensation, right? You know, but you really risk losing.
I mean,
the player.
Yeah, I was just throwing it. I don't want to get too down that rabbit hole because, I mean, regardless. Long-term deal is not coming this year, you know, this summer into the training camp, and I doubt it's going to happen after this year, regardless of how well Le'Veon Bell performs.
Let's see. If memory serves me, $11.789 million was the franchise tag this year. Transition tag, $9.647 million.
Okay.
So, two point something.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. So, I mean, it's not – I just throwing it out there. I mean, this is just me trying to react to the news, and obviously that's kind of the least important part, the debating franchise versus transition tag. It's not the headline to talk about.
And here's the thing. I mean, we're not even – the franchise tag is not even in the discussion if he doesn't come back from this presumed 4-game suspension and just, you know, is the same – like I said, the same running back he was – prior to going down injured there.
I think he will be, though. I think that's a fairly safe bet now that he even has an extra month to heal up that knee and be pretty close to 1 year since the injury. Still, I think, about 11 months because the injury happened in early November. But it's just about trust and can we, you know, can you buy into the system and be a team guy and do those things and set a good example, and do you reflect all the values that the Pittsburgh Steelers, led by the Rooneys, have, and Le'Veon Bell is failing in every area.
All right, moving forward, let's assume he's not going to be there. Thank goodness for D'Angelo Williams, right?
Yeah, man, talk about great free agency pickups, man. This one might not have the long-term impact of, say, James Ferrier or Ryan Clark, but just in terms of that short-term value, it might be one of the best decisions Kevin Colbert and company's made since he's been here. I mean, this is a guy that you can still rely on. He can be the bell cow in my eyes. We're not talking about a guy that you're going to need 5 years from now. So he can, you know, definitely shoulder the load for the first month of the year. And, I mean, this is what happened last year. You saw what he did last year, and he was fantastic.
You think he thinks he's underpaid?
I think he does, but he doesn't make a stink about it. He's a professional in every sense of the word. He's a great community guy. I mean, his biggest problem is some couple of tweets. You know, he gets into Twitter wars, and that seems to be the least offensive thing compared to what Le'Veon Bell's going through.
I can handle an outspoken player more than I can an outsmoking player.
Oh, you're gonna have to tweet that one out later. That is gold.
I don't know. I might get another clueless remark.
That's man, Bell. He says he hadn't missed a test, and then he's talking about people being clueless and. Someone said that his last tweet was talking about selfishness, being selfish is poison or something like that, I think. And I'll have to –
it was, and he since protected his tweets.
I just clicked on his profile, and it's private.
So unless you if you follow him already, which I was still able to see his tweets after he went protected. This is just yet another – I mean, that's guilty as charged right there, right? Mm-hmm. If you protect your tweets,
mm-hmm.
I mean, come on, face the music, right?
He's got 650,000 followers, so you're not protecting your stuff from that many people.
No, but I mean, it's just further confirmation that kind of backs up this report that we're seeing this morning. Okay, behind, and I wrote about this morning as well too, Alex. You know, I view the running back position as better insulated depth-wise this year than it was last year. Agree?
Well, I mean, obviously, you know, you had D'Angelo Williams last year, and then once Bell came back, you had your depth again. But in terms of going beyond the number two spot and number three, yeah, I mean, I think it's better. I mean, it's not like we know a ton about Fitzgerald Toussaint, but he's a guy the team clearly likes. He kind of was able to ascend his way, work up from practice squad to the 53 to active and having a role. And then
I'm gonna corner you now.
Okay, I'm ready.
Who would you rather have? Would you rather have Fitzgerald Toussaint, Dre Archer, Jordan Todman, or Will Johnson backing up D'Angelo Williams?
I don't think that's really cornering me. I think 90% of people would say Fitzgerald Toussaint. I mean, Todman's the only one that you could maybe argue otherwise for, but. We've talked about Toussaint before and some of the good things that he's done. You know, he's got some power and he's a straight line runner. And while you want to see some more, you know, bigger explosive plays, we understand he's faced some tough defenses, Denver in the playoff game last year. So, I mean, you know, depth can only be so good, but you have Toussaint, a guy that you like, a guy that's played some football before, with other teams in the NFL. You have Darrell Richardson, a guy who has, you know, a couple years of Sunday experience. You have a couple of, you know, UDFAs and small name guys that have some intriguing backgrounds. So, I mean, you know, led by D'Angelo Williams, I mean, your depth is as good as it's going to get.
Is Darrell Richardson the guy to watch now to make the roster as a number three?
Well, he's got the most interesting resume just because he's a draft pick. He has, I don't know exactly how many career carries he has, 100 or 150. He's
167.
167, thank you. Always on the spot. So he's got that Sunday experience. He played 2 years with the Rams. You know, you're going to have to see some stuff on special teams. He's never played a special team snap in his life. I went back and looked at the numbers through Football Outsiders and zero career special team snaps. But he's going to be the big name there. And you have some other interesting guys. Cameron Stingley, who I just talked to the other day, is in great shape now. Brandon Brown Dukes, who's a small school kid out of Mercyhurst. Brandon Johnson from Penn State. Of course, most of those guys aren't going to end up really making an impact for the team, but you know, I think there's intrigue in that room, and in this situation, that's all you can really ask for.
You know, we spent a lot of time talking and writing about recently how you know, the final 53-man roster this year might not, I mean, it might wind up including a player that's currently not even on the 90-man roster mm-hmm. right now. We saw it last year with Jordan Tyman, right? I mean, could there is a greater possibility now that we might see a number three running back on this final 53 that might not currently be on the roster now, right?
Absolutely. That's a fantastic point because they have to wait till right before the start of the year to put Bell on the suspended list. Am I correct on that?
Yeah.
And then so that opens up a spot on the 53.
Right, but I mean, I think Bell will be placed on that suspension list prior to the final, as part of the final cutdown,
okay.
not after the final 53
okay.
man.
But it still does open up a spot, though, is my point. So you only have, you know, 53 to work with at that moment, and then once you make the corresponding move of your cutdowns and putting Bell, it opens up a spot. So you can do your cutdowns, put Bell on the suspended list, and then the next day you can sign somebody. So, yeah, I think that that's a great point. It actually probably seems more likely than not that that's going to happen. You can bet their pro personnel guys, Brandon Hunt and the bunch, are going to be looking at these preseason running backs around the league pretty hard.
Would you at all consider Jordan Todman back? I mean, I was kind of curious that he didn't at least re-sign for the minimum.
I'm not opposed to it. It's not like there's some compelling reason to say no. Obviously, it looks unlikely. If he didn't come back now, is he going to come back again? Somebody, and Todman, of course, would be familiar with him.
I wonder if it was the fact, I wonder if Todman was waiting for that $80,000.
This minimum signing bonus you're talking about.
Right, because that's what he ultimately got from the Colts.
Or he just felt like, you know, the opportunity in Pittsburgh with Bell coming back and D'Angelo and getting passed up by Toussaint, he felt like, I got no chance here in Pittsburgh. They've already made their decision. They want Toussaint over me, and he's like, let me go somewhere else and try to find a chance for playing time. I think that seems more likely.
I mean, it's hard to say whether or not the Steelers will. The fact that they didn't re-sign him for the minimum kind of speaks volume, though, doesn't it?
Yeah, like I said, I think they made the decision that they wanted Toussaint over Todman at the time, and I'm sure Todman understood that. Now, of course, the landscape has changed, but regardless of who it is, I think that there's a good chance they do bring somebody in. And you know, there's always these preseason running backs that get a lot of burn and do well. So, you know, it's definitely something to watch. You know, the competition within the room itself right now, the guys that they have, that's where it starts. You see how they perform and evaluate them. And if you're not happy with what you're getting out of them, yeah, you're going to bring somebody else. And we already know there's going to be a new running back in camp halfway through anyway. I mean, it always happens. You know, Juwan Chisholm, Braylon Hurd last year. So, you know, we'll see whatever new guy shows up and what he can do.
You're going to set up your Cedric Pierman shrine, aren't you?
He's not getting cut, though. I promise you that. I wish. But
Danny Smith wishes, too.
Yeah,
you know Danny Smith would be all over Cedric Pierman. He talks about him so much.
Every Bengals game, you know, when they do that little sit-down with Labs, that's the name, the big topic of conversation. Yeah, that'd be a nice dream, but just that.
I don't know. They got a new offensive coordinator there. I mean, I know the answer to this. Is he that good of a special teams player that you just
Dave.
Can't warrant?
Yeah, my heart's already broken today after Bell. Don't talk that about Cedric Pierman.
I don't know. I'm just going to throw it out there.
I hope you're right. I mean, I'll drive that bus if you are.
You would hope and think and want that your third running back would be a guy that could give you a lot on special teams, though, right?
I mean, they're going to have to. If you want to be active, you got to at least do something. I mean, it depends what you define as a lot. You're not necessarily going to get a four-phase guy. I think Toussaint played on, two, maybe three. I can't remember off the top of my head last year. He ran down some kicks. Like, he wouldn't always start there, but he would get put on there halfway through. I think he was on the punt return unit, I think. I think he might have been on the kick return unit as an up-back. So you're not going to get a core special teamer unless it's a guy like Pierman, but you have to be able to do something. And yeah, you have to have some aptitude and trust for that, sure.
Yeah, it'd be fun to watch some of these younger running backs now. You know, we've already broken down the running back position quite thoroughly a few weeks ago there, so there's no sense rehashing a lot of it. But I mean, there's more intrigue now with this Bell possible suspension to see what guys, and really more special teams than anything else, because let's face it, let's assume it's Williams and Toussaint. You want a better special teams player than you do a running back, I guess, is what I'm trying to say, is at number three.
Yeah, you try to find a little bit of both, a little bit of balance. But, of course, at number three guy is one injury away from being the backup and getting some reps. So, you can't focus solely on special teams. So we'll see where it goes. Again, I don't want to get too bogged down in all that. We got a lot of time to talk about that. Let me ask you, I know I'm going to put you on the spot here. I know this is an impossible question to answer, and we're not going to hold you to it. We're not going to write this down in pen. But where do you think Le'Veon Bell's future goes in Pittsburgh? Is this his last year? Does he come back on the tag? Where do you think, if 2 years from now, where are we at with the Steelers and Le'Veon Bell?
I think he's, as frustrated as I am, and I know several of the listeners are right
all
now.
All the listeners.
I mean, all the listeners. Assuming this doesn't blow up into another DUI or whatnot, and I just can't see them letting him walk, without tagging him at least next year. So, could they just upright and let him go via free agency and get a third round compensatory pick? Sure, but. Running backs like Le'Veon Bell don't come along that often. I know we talk, there's discussion all the time about how fungible the position is, and it is, but when you have a guy that really is a wide receiver functioning as a ball carrier, those guys just don't come around very often. So at this point in time, I would still be willing to pop a $12 million franchise tag on him and take it from there. So I'm going to say that he will be a member of the Steelers in 2017. As far as beyond that, it's so hard to tell. I mean, injuries and all, everything. But I mean, could they let him walk after their 2017 season? Yeah, just as easily as they could after their 2016 season. But if I had to point to the fence right now, I would say Le'Veon's going to be here 2016 and 2017 at least.
That's where I lean. But here's the thing with that. We all recognize, even people that are supporting Bell and you and I who have that thought that he still could get tagged after this year. Long term, we don't know where running back position is going to be. Obviously, D'Angelo Williams is not a long term option. So, I mean, you have to draft a running back high in this upcoming draft, right? I mean, within the top, I don't know, three rounds. It's a great running back class. I mean, I haven't studied it super close, but, I still follow all the guys on Twitter that focus on the draft really, really, closely, and it's a great running back class coming out this year. So wouldn't it be reckless to not invest high, to excuse the pun, in the position in the draft?
I would, yes. Yeah, I mean, yeah, I wouldn't in the first round, though. I'll tell you that right now.
Okay.
I would, much in the way that they did with Bell, I think you can get a good, potential, franchise back. Is there really such a thing?
Well, don't even worry about the terms, but if you take it back in the second round, I mean, doesn't that partly spell the end of Le'Veon Bell, because you can't have that second round guy sit forever?
Sure. Well, I mean, sure you can. I mean, considering the money he's going
to
make.
I mean, yeah, but the investments, you want to get guys on the field. You draft guys that high to get people onto the field. I mean, it's not a guy that's going to sit and play a clear second fiddle, well, to Le'Veon Bell.
Well, obviously, if you're going to spend a second round draft pick and keep Le'Veon, I mean, you don't want to spend a second round pick and him sit there for 3 years,
right?
And get 100 carries in that span of time.
I mean, he could kind of play a reserve role in 2017, and then Bell's gone for good after 2017, and then this draft pick gets to show what he can do. I mean, the bottom line is you have to take a running back high. You can't wait and just assume Bell's going to figure out his own problems and give him a long-term deal, because there's no trust in that. So you're taking a running back next year within – the first three rounds to give yourself that depth and give yourself a better shot at a long-term future with a running back? I mean, is there even a debate about that?
Well, you'll know real quick anyway, because the franchise tag has to be issued long before the draft.
Right.
For starters.
Right, but so, even if it is issued and we kind of think maybe that it's going to be, it doesn't. You still have to take a running back within the first three rounds.
But I will say this. And this is me kind of playing GM here. If you do franchise him, I would not draft a running back in the first two rounds.
Well, if there's a good value in the second round, you know, you take a guy in the second round. I don't want to say that you don't take a guy in the second round just because, you know, you don't think you should. For some,
I think you could go different ways with it with those picks, and then, you know, that way it lessens the urgency to get this guy on the field because you have a second round pick on him.
But you can't draft somebody in the fifth round and hope that they're going to be your future. I mean, you got to put some sort of investment into somebody to really
You do have to do that, but you could look, if there's one position where a rookie can come in and play right away, it's running back, right?
Right, but you're still always rolling the dice, and you got to give yourself the best chance possible. Yeah, of course, there's always, you know, Thomas Rawls and, you know, Steelers' No. Willie Parker, guys that have come out of nowhere and been big contributors, but you give yourself the best chance, and the higher investment you make, the better chance that you're going to have. I don't know. I
will leave it to this. I would not spend a first-round draft pick on one, end of story, and then go – whichever way you want to go.
I don't think they will in the first, because usually the first round goes, you're either going to take somebody really, you know, in the top 10 because there's some Ezekiel Elliott kind of guy that's going to come out, or, you know, because the Steelers are going to be picking probably somewhere in the 20 range again, hopefully, you know, later. So there's probably not going to be a running back with great value there. So you're probably going to wait to the second, third round. But, I mean, I think you can almost say that outside linebacker is going to get taken within the first two rounds. I think you can say with almost certainty that a running back is going to get taken within the first three rounds.
And look, we'll see what happens with D'Angelo. I mean, he no signs that he's ready to hang it up.
Right.
But on the flip side, if he does what he's supposed to do during the first quarter of the season and plays the role that we think he's going to play after that, he's going to be worth a little bit more than what he's getting right now. Sure. And he obviously, you know, let's assume the Steelers don't win the Super Bowl this year. He's still going to be looking for a Super Bowl. He's going to want to sign with a team that gives him a good opportunity to do that. But Father Time's undefeated as well, too, so we have to keep that in mind. And, well, you know, Fitzgerald Toussaint, I mean, can this guy be the guy? Probably not. Can he be the backup to the guy? Probably. I think it's still too early to know whether or not Fitzgerald Toussaint can be the backup to the guy.
Yeah, I mean, it's all uncertain. But
and if that's the case, I mean, and if you feel comfortable with that, then if you put the franchise tag on Le'Veon Bell, then in my opinion, no, you don't take a running back in those first two rounds.
Yeah.
So I think a lot of it might depend on what you think you may or may not have in Fitzgerald Toussaint.
We'll see where the year goes.
Oh, God, I sure didn't want to talk about – I sure had no plans on talking about Le'Veon Bell and the running back position this much.
It's just crazy. I just can't wrap my head around it. I mean, you're the top of your game. You have the whole world in front of you. You can be the best back in the league. You can show everybody that. You can get your money. And you're just skipping drug tests because, I mean, obviously because he was going to fail him. I mean, I know, you know, I was – very respectful of his time with Snoop Dogg, and I don't know if that's where it stemmed from. You know, who only knows. But
but let me just tell you, what my understanding is on that situation is he never was in the same room with Snoop Dogg.
Okay.
To my understanding, they traded tracks via, however,
okay,
email, you know, FTP, whatever. To my understanding, those two were never together and in a studio together.
Okay. Well, I mean, my point I'm just trying to make is, you know, because people were concerned about that kind of stuff and where's your focus at and where's your mindset at, and, you know, it's his life. You know, we thought I was trying to give him the benefit of the doubt and say, you know, it's the off season. That's what he wants to do. You know, more power to him. Just don't do stupid things. But it's just, you know, he has the song Focus. Le'Veon Bell, where is your focus at? It's clearly not with football.
I think this is a guy, and look, I only play a psychiatrist on Twitter, and my wife only plays one here in the house. But, you know, looking at just Le'Veon Bell just comes off as a confused young man right now, a guy that on the brink of stardom. He's already has a stardom on the brink of making a lot of money. Probably has a lot of family and friends who really aren't good family and friends that probably coming after him for money right now. So having to kind of work in such a small circle of individuals, you know, let's face it, some of these kids just aren't ready for success, right?
Yeah, I mean, I can sympathize. I mean, I certainly can't empathize because I've never been in that situation. Be that it is tough to play in the NFL as a young guy and to go from, you know, if your family didn't have a lot of money and to go to this fame, and yeah, you got uncles you never heard of before saying, hey, remember me? I mean, I get all that, but I'm sorry. There's just no excuse. You just – I mean, I'm not naive that a lot of players in the NFL smoke pot, and because a lot of people don't agree with the law, and you know it's not that harmful. I mean, it, you know, it really isn't. But
sure, but the rules say you can't do
that.
No,
I mean, I understand. Yeah, but my point is that they're just not that stupid that they don't get caught. I mean, you only have a small fraction of players that get suspended for pot, and I'm sure it's so much higher. You know, the ratio of players that smoke pot to the number of players that get suspended for it. You know, it's very small. So you just have to be smart about it. That's all you have to do, which is not be an idiot, and you won't get in trouble. And he can't even do that.
Allegedly.
I mean, allegedly, yeah. I mean, I am glad to be wrong if this story comes out and he ends up winning an appeal or the whole report is bunk or whatever, but I think that seems very unlikely right now.
I always liked how Jim Rome did that. You ever listen to Jim Rome?
I do.
he would throw that stuff out, and there'd be a slight pause. He's the king of dead air.
the pauses, yeah.
You know those dead air pauses, and then says allegedly.
What was the name of was it Rome is Burning? Is that his ESPN?
Yeah, that's what he did on what was it, CBS or ESPN One, the actual show that he had. But okay. I mean, his radio show, you know, has been legendary for, I guess it's legendary in the eyes of whoever, you know, listen. I mean, a lot of people don't like Jim Rome, and I understand why. But he's been a radio icon, sports radio icon for years. I'm talking years and years. I mean, nationally syndicated show and everything. All right, enough of Le'Veon Bell Depot. Let's move on to Matt Spaeth Depot. I was asked on Twitter, for those who haven't heard yet, Matt Spaeth was released with the failed physical designation on Thursday. I was asked later in the day how surprised on a scale of 1 to 10 was I that this happened. I can only answer that kind of twofold. I think anybody that listens to this podcast or reads my work on Steelers Depot knows that I have put out there all offseason long that Matt Spaeth in no way, shape, or form should be considered a guaranteed roster lock this year. You add into that the fact that he apparently missed all the offseason practices. You know, he's standing out there helping, but he had off-season knee surgery, so that was another strike that he had going against him. Not that $1 million salary in 2016 was a lot, but, you know, every nickel and dime against the cap helped, so he had that going against him. The fact that he possibly was looking at being the number three tight end on the roster, the fact that he's not a special teams demon, the fact that he's not the Matt Spaeth blocker that I fell in love with several years ago anymore. All this you could see writing on the wall. So was I surprised that Matt Spaeth is gone? No. Am I surprised it happened before the start of training camp? Yeah, I think, I mean, look, none of us know how he was shaping up health-wise and all like that, and I, you know, the failed physical designation is what it is, and really tells you volumes about this whole thing here. So, am I surprised on a scale of 1 to 10 that Matt Spaeth's gone? That would probably be a 2, mm-hmm. 1 or 2. Am I surprised that it happened now? That would probably be a 6 or 5 or 6.
Yeah, I never really know, you know, the rationale of why teams, you know, make their cuts when they do, but it doesn't really matter, I guess. I'm with you, Dave. Obviously, Spade was going to, you know, had a lot of competition brought in and was battling himself and his own health and, you know, his own, you know, shrinking role in his offense. And really, you know, once, you know, because I've been saying last, you know, basically this whole offseason that Jesse James was going to come into the training camp as the number two tight end. So, you know, what role does Matt Spaeth even have at that point? It's really, you know, there's really nothing to offer because he's not going to get the play. He's not going to be able to be a valuable blocker like he has been. So, you know, Spaeth had a really strong career as a blocker, and to play this long in the league, regardless of your role and your position, is a testament to himself. And shouldn't be, you know, understated and overlooked the value that he had. But, you know, whenever you're just a very niche kind of guy, just that big blocker, it is going to shorten that shelf life a little bit. And, of course, once the injuries start, once that snowball gets going, Dave, it usually doesn't stop. So it's not a surprise, but, you know, Spaeth had a great career in Pittsburgh, classy guy. He had a great, you know, response and message to the fans yesterday. So, you know, he's definitely one of the well liked, I'm sure, internally, and maybe he doesn't get the credit for externally, but definitely had a lot of value to this team.
He was the whipping boy pre William Gay.
Yeah.
Especially on offense.
You probably remember a little better than I do, but yeah.
I never understood it. Now, yeah. Back then, of course, we didn't have all 22, but I mean, if you tape the games or whatnot, mm-hmm. I mean, people just it's sad that we didn't have the all 22 and all back there, because it'd been so fun to thump those narratives right out of the water back then. But his first stint in Pittsburgh was a lot better than he got credit for. And you know, people say, then why did they let him walk during free agency? Because they were up against the cap. You know, those years, he obviously was worth a little more than minimum salary. So it's not surprising that he left and signed with the Chicago Bears for a couple of years. And then on the flip side, is a testament of that they still really liked him was the fact that he came back mm-hmm. for a second stint in Pittsburgh, you know, at a lot lower money, and still played well. Now, I pointed this out several times. The writing was on the wall. You won't find a bigger defender of Matt Spaeth than me. But the writing was on the wall with his play last year, most notably out in space trying to get to the edge on some of those bubble and smoke screens. And he just wasn't the reliable Matt Spaeth on the end of the line of scrimmage when asked to, and you know, he only played what 300 and something snaps. He missed what 3 games mm-hmm. with hand knee injuries. You could see this coming.
I mean, I still thought his quality of play, you know, obviously there was some decline, but I still thought it was, you know, still pretty good last year. And you know, he's a big guy. I mean, how tall is he? 6'7", 6'8", 6'7", 6'6",
right?
I forget. I mean, in the way the Steelers offense functioned, you know, he would go out there against Cincinnati. I mean, I won't forget it. And he's out there, you know, pass protecting against, you know, Carlos Dunlap and Michael Johnson, all the big, long defensive ends that they have. And there's not a lot of guys in the league that can do that, Dave. Unless you're a real good technician like Heath Miller, you know, you really have to have just the size to be able to combat those guys. That's something David Johnson's not going to be able to do. So that, you know, that kind of, there's an argument against his roster spot. That's kind of it. Spaeth had that ability, and he did it well, and he did it, you know, with pride, and you appreciate that. It's funny, though, Dave. When he came out of Minnesota, Matt Spaeth, he was a receiving tight end. He had won the best the Mackey Award, I think, his last year there. He was supposed to be this big receiving threat. Obviously, his career went in a totally different direction, but it's just kind of funny to see how it evolved. But he found his role, he accepted it, and he did it very, very well.
Well, when you have a guy like Heath Miller, I mean, I guess more than anything about his career, maybe I was a little bit surprised he wasn't used a little bit more in the passing game as a second tight end. But, you know, a second tight end is what they is. Those guys are normally in there to do one thing, and that's block.
Well, in the Steelers offense, yeah. I mean, he was right. A perfect fit for Pittsburgh. I think if he had been drafted by any other team, he might have been out of the league within like 3-4 years. Pittsburgh was the place that he could shine.
Well, we saw what he did in with the Bears, right?
Yeah, I mean, he had success there, too. Absolutely, yeah.
You know, and I'm talking as a receiver, right?
I mean, his numbers went up a little bit, but I don't think he's going to remember.
Better as a receiver.
I mean, better than nothing. I mean, I'm sure he won't be remembered as a receiver in Chicago, though. I mean, I think his numbers were up a little bit. But.
Right. He had 13 receptions for 78 yards and three touchdowns in the two seasons with Chicago.
Only once he caught more than 10 passes in the league. But, hey, that was fine. That wasn't his role.
And that was, what, 2008?
Yeah, I'm looking at his stat line right now. 2008, 17 catches, 136 yards, no touchdowns. The only year he cleared 10 receptions, only year he cleared 100 yards. His next highest yards were 80 in 2010.
All right, we know where this leaves us now, and we kind of knew it was going this way. It was probably going to go this way even with Matt Spaeth, had Matt Spaeth made the 53. You're going to have Ladarius Green, who we hope is ready for the start of training camp. You're going to have Jesse James, number two. Jesse probably going to see, you know, depending on how they divvy these snaps up, you could see some instances where Jesse James is your 11 personnel tight end. Obviously, you gave Ladarius Green the big money. You're probably going to see him out there more. But regardless, those guys are one and two. We've talked all offseason about Xavier Grimble, about how, you know, possibility of him making a roster. His chances obviously increase now. The Steelers went out and signed David Johnson during the offseason as well, who more of a I still consider him more fullback or H-back than I do tight end. But even so, considering the fact that the Steelers carried a guy with his same skill set last year, in addition to Roosevelt Nix and a guy in the form of Will Johnson, that's primarily been your argument most of the offseason, right?
Well, my argument has just been that, you know, the more that you can do for this team, the more versatility that you have, the better chance of a roster spot you're going to make. And obviously that's pretty intuitive. And Johnson's a guy that can be an inline guy. He can play off ball, can play fullback, you know, has been split out wide before. I mean, I don't expect him to do that in Pittsburgh, but, you know, he did that with San Diego last year a little bit. I just think you can move him around a lot. So if there's ever, you know, when he's active on game day and he's number three tight end, you know, you likely will be. If there was an injury to Roosevelt Nix, an injury at tight end, or whatever the case is, you have David Johnson to kind of plug that hole for a game. And so I think there's something attractive about that and that versatility. That's why I think he's going to make the team.
All right. Well, yeah, that's something, a battle or two to watch during training camp. Not that it wasn't going to be already, but now with Matt Spaeth out of the picture, really going to be fun to watch what happens here at the backup or number three tight end position, along with whatever you want to consider David Johnson at this point. All right, let's wrap it up with continuing our look at the some personnel groupings, and we've already gone through most of it here. Well, we're left with the offensive line. Today we're going to talk about tackle, and, you know, you can't start off a talk about the Steelers tackles without talking about Marcus Gilbert, who, for all practical purposes, you can make a strong argument for maybe being recognized for the Pro Bowl last year.
Certainly one of the most underrated players, I think, you know, nationally. If you look at the Pittsburgh Steelers, if you were to list, you know, who are the top players on this offense, a lot of people would have Marcus Gilbert a lot lower than he should be. Yeah, he was fantastic last year. His transformation, you know, from where he was, really, I think at the start of 2014 season, the first month, remember that first month for him was really, really rough. And, you know, Mike Munchak really helped him turn things around. I think Gilbert got more serious about, you know, taking care of his body and being in good shape. I think his technique has cleaned up a lot, carrying his hands higher, having a better punch, not getting run into the pocket as often. So, yeah, Gilbert's been fantastic.
And, you know, look, I think him being over that ankle injury now, him losing some weight, I just think he looks better, he plays better. If anything, he struggles maybe with some counter moves at times to the inside, occasionally beat to the edge, you know. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, There's nothing I mean, this guy has solidified himself, and you put it best, probably the most underrated right tackle in all of football right now. Mm-hmm. Over on the left side, you know, it's Alejandro Villanueva versus Ryan Harris, and it's that simple. With Villanueva likely to be considered the incumbent as this team opens training camp, a guy who you've drawn it out several times, made progress from week seven on in the season, a guy that still has a long way to go. I believe, in my opinion, he's far from his ceiling as a left tackle goes. A guy that probably never is going to be regarded as a Joe Thomas technician, but how many of those guys out there are? But with that said, a guy that I think still can be a quality top 12-ish starting left tackle in the league?
Yeah, I think that's fair to say. I mean, we'll see where his career goes. Obviously, none of us really know for sure. And I've talked about Villanueva, I think, every which way, so I won't spend a lot of time on it now. I think, you know, he showed a lot of progression last year and got a lot better as the year went on, and that was expected and critical and what you need to see. And now that I think he has a year to go back and breathe a little bit, and go back and look at the tape and you know, work on some things and see where he could have gotten better, because, you know, his head had to have been spinning the whole time last year, getting thrown into the fire like that halfway through the year, trying to pick things up and really learn as you go along. And that's why I thought Ramon Foster was a really steady presence from last year, and is going to continue to need to be that this year. So, you know, I think I answered this on my mailbag yesterday, Dave, that I think sometimes we talk a little too much about his Army background and military, and while obviously he's a hero, and football doesn't really even matter and pales in comparison, and yes, there are some intrinsic things you can carry over from being in the Army to football, but I think we just need to focus on what he's doing in the NFL right now and kind of stop talking about that background, because it's a little irrelevant at this point.
Could he be a little overrated? Sure.
Yeah.
And I might be guilty of that.
I just want to make sure we're focusing on talking about the football and how he's doing, and not just, you know, put everything in terms of, well, he's been in the military, so he'll figure it out, you know.
Biggest thing with him is balance, in my opinion, and his ability to fundamentally handle those twists and stunts.
Yeah, I think stunts were a big issue for him last year. Just, you know, a lot of speed of the game. It basically came to the point last year where it looked like they were just doing basically, you know, not passing off the stunts. Usually it's a zone, you know, pass off where you're going to, you know, one guy's going to take the penetrator, one guy's going to take the looper. You're not going to be set on a man, a defensive tackle, the defensive end. You know, it's about staying at the same level as your guard and working in tandem, communicating well. It's about repetition. And Mike Munchak, ever since he's gotten here, has really dedicated a lot of practice time to stunt pick up and work. I see it in training camp almost every day. So that's going to be big for him. Some of the zone block rules, you know, knowing when to come off, when, you know, who's leaving, who's going to second level, who isn't, who's staying on the first level. You know, we've seen issues with that. So it's a lot about the details, a lot about the communication. And I talked about it before. I think some of the veteran guys give him trouble. Dwight Freeney last year, Michael Bennett, those guys that have a bunch of moves and can read you and can counter well. You know, Villanueva kind of has to work on changing some of his sets, changing some of his punches a little bit, not doing the same thing over and over again because guys start to figure him out. He's got that really nasty two-hand chop, will slap your hands down, but he uses it a little too much, and it's kind of easy to anticipate. So, you know, it's all learning lessons for him, but just variety in his sets and his attacks is going to be big for him.
As far as his understanding X's and O's of the position, not worried about that, right?
Obviously, whenever you see guys miss stunts and you see guys, you know, not follow their zone block rules, that's an X's and O's, that's a scheme, you know, playbook issue, so it has to be worked on. So, I mean, you have to see that.
But, you know, stuff as far as reading the bubble and you know, and stuff like that, you know, the zone variables.
I think he struggled on some of that. We've seen some issues. You know, the Bengals game last year, I pointed out in the one step to take with Ramon Foster, there's some of the zone rules him and Foster have screwed up on. I mean, it can get better, and I think it will, but I think that's part of the issue, is just being able to play fast and play, you know, smart.
athleticism.
I mean, he's solid. You know, obviously for a guy that big, he moves very well. He's a very easy mover. You know, he's able to cover, of course, a lot of ground because he's a big 6'9 frame. I think he's a decent technician. The guy only had two penalties last year. I know he didn't play the entire season, but only two penalties for, you know, over half a season is really impressive for a first-year guy. So I think his technique is solid, and I think he's a good athlete. I think he's a very moldable piece. You know, this is a big year for him, obviously.
I think balance is one of these things with him as well, too, which isn't surprising.
Balance. Okay, yeah. No, he can get knocked off balance. Yeah, he's a big guy.
And that's not uncommon for a guy with his size. Mm-hmm. You gotta watch. It was evident a few times that he could easily be knocked off of his anchor,
mm-hmm.
If you will, especially in that slide to the right there. So I'm not that worried about him, to be quite honest with you. I think he'll be better this year. And if he's not, and he can't win the job, you have Ryan Harris there, who's not sexy whatsoever, but he's a guy that's experienced on both the left and right side. Look, say what you will about Ryan Harris. He played all 16 games for the Denver Broncos last year, and he won a Super Bowl.
Exactly, yeah. He's a guy that I would really prefer and hope and think that he's going to be the backup, a guy that has a lot of experience on the right and left side. So if somebody goes down, you don't have to move guys around. You can just plug Ryan Harris in and deal with it. So, yeah, I think it was a very nice pickup for Pittsburgh. Of course, like you said, it's not a sexy pick, but a necessary one to give yourself some more comfort. Tackle, so that way it's not a Chris Hubbard, that way it's not a rookie like a Jarrell Hawkins. It's a guy that's been there, done it before, and can make a transition without much hassle.
And ideally, if you ask me, you want a guy like Harris to be your swing. Mm-hmm. However, and I wrote this somewhere in one of these posts before, I'm not going to be upset whichever way this left tackle spot finishes out, because I think you have two guys in Harris and Villanueva who can play both sides for you and can swing if needed.
Yeah, I think it's going to go to Villanueva. I'm sure they're going to frame it as a battle, and Harris is going to get some chances, but I think it's going to be Villanueva's job to lose. And again, I would rather have Harris as the backup, because I'd rather have him be the swing guy than Villanueva, because I don't think Villanueva is going to be nearly as good of a swing guy, because he's got a little bit of time on the right side, but it's not much, and he's been so focused on playing left tackle. I think moving to the right side would be an issue for him.
And Jarrell Hawkins. Look, I mean, all we have is that LSU tape to go on right now. There's some things to be excited about. There's some things to be not so excited about based on his tape. There's a reason he went in the fourth round. But on the flip side, we hope not to see him at all this year, and if we do see him, it will unfortunately probably be at left tackle.
I expect him to make good friends with the bench in the big heaters this year, because I don't expect him to play, and if he does, we got problems.
And you wrote a little bit, and even I think talked to a little bit, Brian Mahalik, mm-hmm. Who really the Steelers are going to try to take the same approach with him as they did Villanueva. This is a guy that we should get some early preseason snaps, right, at left tackle?
Yeah, he's basically a Villanueva clone. He doesn't have the military background, but he's a 6'9", 320-pound tackle who was a defensive lineman in college. He was at Boston College, who went to the Philadelphia Eagles and still played the defensive line, and now the Pittsburgh Steelers are trying to move him to tackles. So it's pretty funny, pretty similar. He's a guy that says he's worked both sides. He says there's some things he likes about the left side. He's a left-handed guy, so the left side's kind of more natural to him. But there's things he likes about the right side as well. He thinks he's a better run blocker on the right side. The footwork's a little bit more intuitive for him. So, he'll be interesting to watch. And just funny to see two 6'9 guys around training camp.
Yeah, I'm going to root for this guy and hope they can throw him on the practice squad like they did for Villanueva for a year. And go from there. But definitely will be a guy that will be charting and breaking down his tape during the preseason for certain, even though it's obvious he's not going to make the 90-man roster, barring something unfortunate happening ahead of him. But probably one of the best guesses would be practice squad for him.
Yeah. Just don't remember, this is his first year doing it. Villanueva had a year in the practice squad before. We really got to see him, so don't expect him to be Villanueva. They all can't be that.
All right, a lot we wanted to try to get to today. We had some tweets from some people wanting us to talk about personnel numbers and nickel and dime. We're going to get to that. We promise you we will. Probably in this next podcast or so. There we just had a lot of news about Bell and Spaeth to get to today. We also wanted to make sure we broke down that tackle position as well too. So tune in on Monday and then we'll have a whole new set of topics to go over. We'll finish up our preseason look at probably the interior position group on the Steelers, interior offensive linemen. You can follow me on Twitter at Steelers Depot. You can follow Alex on Twitter at Alex_Kazora. You can follow my co-host David Todd at David M. Todd. Follow the show at Terrible Podcast. Email the show, theterriblepodcast@gmail.com. If you want to donate to the show, you can do so by going to SteelersDepot.com, hitting that right upper navigational bar where the donate button is. If you want to donate to the training camp cause, you'll see the badge on the lower right-hand column sidebar of Steelers Depot. You can click that, go to the GoFundMe, and drop a few quarters in there for the Alex Kazora training camp fund. Alex, thanks for joining me today. Have a great weekend, everybody. We'll see you back on Monday. And as always, thanks for listening to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave.